All right, we're in Ecclesiastes 10, getting ready for verse 8 through 11. Let's be sure we have we're current on rebound. The preceding example that Solomon gives of a society that is in disarray due to the misguided ruler who thought it was a good idea and to reverse things is an example here of an evil performed under the sun. This evil arises from some wild idea that got into the head of this king. And just because he was a ruler, he thought that he could make it work. And it didn't, and it won't work because he puts the wrong people that are not qualified to assume positions of responsibility, which leads to all kinds of problems within the society and hurts the general population at large and dishonors those who were in these positions legitimately. So it's a lesson, again, on leadership and keeping the right people and not getting emotional and giving someone a position just because you want to help them out and lift them up. There might be a place for that in a given occasion if the person had the wherewithal to carry on and do what they needed to do. It isn't that there isn't a slave out there that couldn't handle something. That's not the point. The point is that he turned everything around and did this class warfare against those people who had served him faithfully, no doubt, and responsibly, and put other people that were in position that was ill-prepared. That's a good way to ruin a business, ruin a lot of things. And so it is, again, an example of folly wrecking things. Leadership is a very important function, and the Bible has to say a lot about it. As far as I'm concerned, my deal is I have the gift. That doesn't automatically mean going to be making perfect decisions, but it means I can make good decisions if I pray about it and ask God to bless me on that side, the teaching side, and then the shepherding side. And my approach to shepherding is to let people have their freedom to function, as I always have, the board of deacons. Even when I saw people, now obviously we had to call a couple people in on the carpet for acting up and acting inappropriately, but we did it in private, we did it one-on-one, and we kept it there. And to give them an opportunity to pull their horns in and quit stepping on people, because they had a position of responsibility and authority within the congregation as a deacon, that they need to back down on this because we observed them not treating people properly, being kind of spiritual bullies and things of that nature. So, being a spiritual leader. Or a leader of anything requires, that, like Solomon, you pray for wisdom. You ask God to help you. If you have people and you're over people in authority, and you have a responsibility to exercise good judgment and do what is right by people, that should be your constant prayer. That you'll manage things properly. And if you feel, some people have told me, well, I just didn't feel like I was going to be able to do this. But God puts you in that position, so he'll make you more inadequate if you pray about it and make the decisions you need to make. Yes, the book of Ecclesiastes definitely illustrates a lot of the craziness that we observe in our world today, where things are turned upside down. Accidents in life illustrated. He who digs a pit may fall into it. This indicates someone involved in the process. In this case, a pit is dug. It could be dug for a number of reasons. The word pit, gumak, here and in Proverbs 26:37, the verb kaper, to dig, the one digging, cal participle, the one who digs or the one digging a pit may fall, cal imperfect, nafel, into it. And a serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. Breaks is paratz, wall is gader, and bite is nasak, snake is nabesh. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them. Quarries is to pull out, nasa, so it's a good word for this in this context. Stones may be hurt, nifel imperfect of atzav, to grieve, in this case hurt. And he who splits logs, the word tree is logs, may be in danger. To incur danger is the nifel imperfect of sakan, by them. Sometimes you wonder, what's this all? Why are we telling us this? Everybody knows these things. If the axe is dull, the word axe is barzel, which is the Hebrew word for iron, but we know it's an axe. If the axe is kasha, PL perfect, be dull. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen, pilpel perfect, kaleo, a verb that means to be swift, and he does not sharpen its edge, that's the word face, then he must exert more strength. Must exert is the pil imperfect of gabar, to prevail, be mighty. And strength is kayil, might. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. Yitron, which we've seen regularly through the book, means profit or advantage. Wisdom, kakma, gives success. Hifil definitive construct, kasser, give success. If, the second if clause, if the serpent bites before being charmed, nabash, bite, nasak, before being charmed. The word charmed is is a noun, which is labash, and it means a whispering. Interesting word. A whispering. There's obviously a technique for charming a cobra. You've got to go to school to learn how to do this. there's no trial and error on this one. How would you like to have your first go around? If the serpent bites before being charmed, this is an understatement, there is no profit for the charmer. There's your yitron again, for the negative, for the charmer. Charmer is the word owner, Baal, B-A-A-L, which means owner, husband, and so forth. And, of course, it's a reference to the god Baal, but that's what that word means. It was a perfectly legitimate word, Baal, owner. He's the owner. Before, if the serpent bites were being charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. Okay, one. This section consists of another series of Proverbs. Two. The Proverbs of verses 8 and 9 illustrate accidents that arise due to carelessness. We've all been victims of that, no doubt. Accidents that occur as a result of carelessness. Those who hunt animals need to be careful, lest the hunter become the prey, fall victim to the thing he was trying to inflict on the, and that's the verse 8. Verse 8. He digs a pit. He's not careful. This is a pit designed to be covered up with something so that the animal that he wants to trap falls into the pit. Maybe there's some kind of a bait set out there, whatever. It's a pit to capture some kind of an animal. Even breaking down a stone wall can conceal the hidden danger of a serpent that bites. Verse 9. One needs to be aware that, one, the walls in view here are uncut stones piled on top of each other. Not a solid wall, but uncut stones piled up, as in Proverbs 24:31 and Numbers 22:24. Snakes lurk between the stones. It's cool there. They get there. The two activities of verses 9 and 10 also require caution. 8. These two things have built-in dangers that any worker must be on guard against. Those of you who work with tools and work with various things, there's inbuilt dangers. Always. Quarrying stones and cutting logs. There's nothing substantial here to suggest that the author is talking about deed consequent principle expressed elsewhere. This happened to you because of some sin in your life. It doesn't necessarily mean that at all. That is not the case. It's just that if people don't exercise the appropriate caution with regard to certain activities, then they are bound to injury or worse. In other words, these potential dangers are not the result of evil behavior on the part of the participants. You don't always have an accident because you did something bad. You just have to understand that. Don't go overboard on it. Now, if you have done something bad, then you know, you might be able to connect the dots. If there's something in your recent thing that was way out of line, and then this boom happened to you, you might connect those dots. It'd be a good idea to, because you could see the deed consequence principle that God brought divine discipline into your life. And all of us have experienced that if we're honest with ourselves. Well, all of us have experienced it, and even maybe severe divine discipline. But God's watching out for you, and it's divine discipline. You have to figure out. A lot of times it's connected. So much so that it's so obvious that, oh yeah, well, that's what that's for. Open my big mouth, I did that, and boom. This section is simply setting forth accidents that can occur in life. It's a part of human existence, part of human life. There is no indication that those involved in these activities are wise or foolish. Okay. Good judgment is not always on the part of the wise either. Any activity that produces good results can be frustrated by an accident, as we're all well aware of. The two Proverbs of verses 10 and 11 are united in form, teaching something about wisdom. The basic idea of verse 10, linguistic problems notwithstanding, is quite clear. A sharp axe will make the job much easier. That's wisdom. Okay? It's universally known. Right? Everybody knows that. A sharp axe makes the job much easier than a dull axe, which requires the exertion of much more strength on the part of the one wielding it. They have to work harder at it. So take care of your tools. have them in good condition, because the people working with them are going to have to struggle with them and are prone to, you know, unnecessary effort and a possible injury. Time is money, as they say, and you're out there trying to fix something that should have been fixed in the first place. It should have been up and running. We're not talking about an unexpected breakdown. We're just talking about doing maintenance. The final clause of verse 10 drives home the point of the benefit of wisdom in this particular example. Of wisdom had the advantage of giving success. Wisdom, a simple principle of wisdom. The tool is going to be sharp. Oh, I'll just get by. I'm tired. If you're cutting logs, that's the most basic thing. That your tools, your blades, are sharp. So wisdom on the part of the axe wielder motivates him to keep his axe sharp for each day's work. This item is going to be addressed every day as he goes out there and does his job. It's his basic tool, I presume. It is also noted that the exercise of good judgment activities can serve to avoid accidents. Good judgment in human activities can serve to avoid accidents. You've got to be on your toes. You've got to be thinking. Oh, you've done it 100 times. You still have to be aware of things around you and what you're doing. Some of you work with things that are potentially dangerous, like electricity and other things. You have to be aware of things. Now, God delivers us from our mistakes, but still, it's just a matter of being, we would say, get in fellowship, keep your wits about you, and do your job. Wisdom, both natural and supernatural, and I've drawn a distinction between the two. Natural wisdom. You don't have to have any doctrine to know that you need to keep your tools in good shape. You don't have to have any doctrine to know that. That's human wisdom. And it's important. And supernatural. Helps people to succeed in life. And reduces the risk of personal harm. Setbacks of various kinds. But, nevertheless, accidents will happen. Now, I'm not... For you to sort out these things in your life is important. You can just say, "Oh, I was stupid. I neglected that." Okay, that's happened. Didn't mean it happened because of some particular sin. Other than you just didn't use the judgment necessary, and it didn't, and things didn't work out right. We've all had it happen. For wisdom to succeed, it must be applied, as illustrated in this interesting second example in verse 11. And boy, would it matter here. An axe wielder, he may just wear himself out because he didn't sharpen his axe at the end of the day or at the beginning of the new day. But this one, there is no room for error. None. You say, "Well, I don't think it's appropriate for people to be charming snakes." Well, that's just what you think. That's okay. Apparently some people do. A snake charmer. We don't have them in our society, as far as I know. We have idiots that play with them. You know. But this is, you know, we see it in India. I don't think there's anything particularly occultic about it. It's just interesting. It's entertainment. There's no, you know, for all the people watching him, I'll call it the word, hypnotize the snake for the moment. To put this state, who was the first guy to get this going? People get involved in some interesting pursuits, don't they? And Solomon is aware of this practice in his day. This is the point of verse 11. If the serpent bites before being charmed, there's no profit to the charmer. A classic understatement, because the cobra will strike and strike hard and inject its venom. And unless there's any antidote for that, the guy's dead. Because it's one of the most potent venoms that is in a creature on earth. They are impressive snakes. Brenda doesn't like snakes at all. Even the pretty ones that are harmless, with all the colors and everything, and all the varieties of them God's put out there. And some of the littlest ones are some of the most deadly ones. But this is, of course, the cobra. The word charmer translated literally as, I didn't bring that out in the exegesis, but I want to do it here for you. The word charmer is composed of two words, master of the tongue. Master of the tongue. Baal, halason. And refers to those who are experts in this activity. Experts. There's a startup. He's in the presence. He's of this snake, and he has to know the distance, and he has to know the procedures to bring this snake into a state where it will not strike and bite him. Fascinating. Well, it may not be to you, but fascinating. You could do this. Neutralizing this animal. Any advantage to the charmer is gone if he's in a hurry. Haste makes waste. You better not be in a hurry today, because your mind isn't completely focused and preoccupied with the moment, because your life's on the line. This isn't just chopping a log. Your life's on the line. So I guess that's part of the adrenaline of it and all the people that are watching it. Even in this case, a few minutes or seconds can spell the difference between success and death. That much. There is no error room for error on this one. In other things, there's wiggle room. There's no wiggle room here. None. Things you never thought you'd come across in the Bible, right? Wisdom must be applied at the right time for there to be success. He knows when, and they do the music and they do the blow the little thing and all that stuff. All right, 12 through 15, shifting gears. Here we get into a section dealing with the mouth, or the apparatus that lips, tongue isn't found in here, but lips and mouth are. Elsewhere the word tongue is used. To illustrate speech, and this section is primarily concentrated on the fool and his mouth that runs incessantly. Words. Dabar, from the mouth of the wise are gracious. C-H-E-N, gracious. That's the word for favor or gracious. Whenever you can speak to people in a gracious way, do so. Other thoughts come to mind. Kind, helpful, encouraging. So the words of the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips, sha'ap, of a fool consume him. The word consume means to swallow. Fool is kessel, the standard word. The beginning of his talking is folly. This jerk, nothing comes out of his mouth that's worth listening to. From the inception, and you're hoping that maybe he'll get around to saying something, well, he doesn't get there. The beginning of his talking is folly. Sikluth, foolishness, folly. And the end of it is wicked madness. How do you translate wicked madness? You have the ra'ah word, evil word. And then you have the word for insanity or madness, holoth. Yet the fool multiplies words. Be much, he filled and perfect, sakeo, fool, again words. A theme throughout Proverbs, no man knows what will happen. Well, ask the fool, he'll tell you. He'll tell you what's going to happen. No man knows what will happen. What will be, cal and perfect. And who can tell him what will come after him? It's just another way of reinforcing the same thought, the general statement, nobody knows what will happen, and who can step up and tell anybody what will come after him? And this gets interesting in that he has the toil. This is the fool who works at some occupation. The toil, amal, of the fool wearies him. Pi'el imperfect, yagia. So you ask the question, why does he get more tired than anyone else? Because he's a dummy. And he doesn't know how to do things in a straightforward way, and he makes things hard on himself. He makes the job a whole lot harder than it needs to be. Because he's a fool. He's smarter than everybody else, right? He has a better way of going about it. And it isn't a better way. It's a wrong way. And so he expends all this extra energy to do something because he isn't doing it in the time-tested and proven way. He's a fool. He's got better ideas. So that's why we have the toil, the work of the fool wearies him, so that he doesn't even know how to go to a city. You wouldn't want to take instructions from this guy. One, because it would be so confusing. Do you ever notice they're kind of a person? You ask them a straightforward question, and they go on and on until it wears you out. And they can't cut to the chase and make it simple. I think they like to feel like they know a lot. And so they got to tell you all this stuff that is extraneous and unnecessary. So he is a confused person. He's easily turned around. So that some place that he should regularly know the path to, I'm assuming this illustrates someone who went out on a job and had to travel over land and then find his way back to the town or wherever that he came from. And he gets confused. See this is, and he gets turned around. Now, we've all been turned around, out driving around. I have. But this is the fool. He doesn't have his bearings right. And the thing is, he doesn't even recognize he's a fool. He doesn't have a clue. These verses present a series of proverbs that deal primarily with the words of the fool, his words primarily. This section presents the damage caused by the words of a fool and the total incompetence of the fool. In verse 12, there's a contrast between the words of the wise man and the words of the fool. This contrast is noted here. Q does not simply say the words of the wise man, but he says the words of the mouth of the wise man, thus emphasizing the instrument of speech. The wise man, his words, one of the ways they're characterized, we would also say should be characterized by the truth, but also characterized by grace, favor. You talk to this person, they have even a person that's out of whack that you're trying to help, you can even be gracious with them. You don't have to be mean. You're trying to help them, presumably, if indeed you are. Now, if all you're trying to do is put them down, make them feel like crap, then that's another matter. But if you're trying to help a person, then one, you have to have your facts. You have to be cautious. Because you're trying to help another person understand something. And if God blesses that, that person that's listening will be benefited and will see the gracious nature of your speech. But in some people, it's absent. It's not there. Because they are always going to be about criticism. Criticism. Nothing positive. It's not in them. But the wise man is characterized by his gracious words. This section presents the damage caused by the words of the fool and the total incompetence of the fool. In verse 12, there is a contrast between the words of the wise man. The words of the wise man are characterized are characterized as words that win favor. If the wise man, he speaks and he has a proper person from him, he wins people over to the position. His logic, his information, the way he handles it. He wins people, brings them where they need to be. The Hebrew word gracious, C-H-E-N, along with the words of the fool, leads to the translation win over. The words of the wise men have a positive benefit in the lives of those who hear him. Is that what is said of you? It's a positive influence. You say, well, some people won't listen. Okay, well, but you still have words of favor. You're speaking reasonably to them on a topic. Whether they listen, that's them. But nevertheless, his words are words of favor. The words, in contrast to this, the proverb goes on to say that the lips of the fool destroy him. In what way? Well, in other words, his ignorant speech brings harm to the fool. He just reaps this. The words consume means to swallow up, which is idiomatic for destruction. People actually ruin themselves by their speech. Note Proverbs 14:3. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back. See, in the Israeli society back in the day, you're saying a lot of stupid junk and run your mouth. They took you out and beat you. Maybe we can beat it out of you. You know, like discipline of a child helps control their STAs. These kind of people are a menace. They're reasonable and decent thinking people and a bad influence on people. Especially and minors and all that. This is the fool giving his ideas of things. So that's the background of this. But the lips of the wise will protect him. See, you have a protection. What comes out of your mouth, it's a protection. Make it good things. In 1817, a fool's mouth is his ruin. And the lips are the snare of his soul. Something as small as words which flow from a person's mouth can lead to his destruction. How? It's for you to understand. Obviously, God isn't for such a person and can get him in a lot of trouble and so forth. All right, let's get ready for the Lord's table. It's 25 after, so.